So this is God's word in Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within the bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I've watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a three-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards his people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in a house for articles of silver and gold, and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians. I'll hand the time over to Ying for the sermon.
Well, good morning, 9:15. Let's go through the drill. Hands up or thumbs up if you can hear me. Great. Well, let me firstly apologize for last week. Apparently last week, all the technology did fail. I was in the chapel. I tried to do something different, but apparently the signal wasn't great. So I've come back into the office close to the Wi-Fi. So hopefully it's going to be a lot better this time. Well, I'm going to get myself, let me try and firstly get things set up right. Here we go. I hope you can see that screen there. Let's see how it goes. And then, sorry, here we go. Okay. Okay, can you hear that? See that phrase, who do you believe? Put your thumbs up, you can see it. Fantastic. We're starting off on the right note, which is great. Well, I want to begin by asking a question. Who do you believe? Who do you believe? Because when you think about it, whether you're thinking about food, or whether you're thinking about that game Fortnite, which only young people can understand, or whether you're thinking about finances, we're always trying to find advice as to what to eat and about how to play the game and about where we should be investing our money. And there's an endless array of advice that comes to us. But the question we're going to ask ourselves is, who do I believe? Do I believe that person? Do I believe that person? Do I believe that person? Who do I believe? And that's a question that I actually want to put to each and every one of us today. Who are you going to believe? Right. And so we're going to look at that question. Well, let's go back into Exodus chapter 1 and 2. Well, we've already got that sort of good summary from Kidwise and from Auntie Louisa. But let me try and summarize a few simple things. Chapter 1, basically the idea is that everything's going according to plan. It's all good. God's plan is being worked out as he had planned. Even though it looks like a complete mess, God says that things are actually going according to plan and it's all good. He's sending Moses to save them from Pharaoh. But ultimately, as we learn from Kids Wise and from Auntie Louisa and from this chapter, God ultimately sends his son to save us from our bigger problem, which is sin. When you come to chapter 2, what do we do? Well, chapter 2 covers that Moses has to flee out of Egypt and he races to a place called Midian. Now, where's Midian? Well, let's have a look at Midian. You can see Midian on the bottom right of that map there. Midian's about 200 miles. How far is that? About 300 kilometers past Newcastle. So if you were running from Sydney to, say, past Newcastle, that's a long way. But that's where Moses raced away from. And chapter 2 covers the next 80 years of Moses' life. There Moses in Midian, he saves some women from being harassed by other men. He takes a fancy to one of the women and marries her. And so for the next 40 years, he grows up and he basically becomes a shepherd man with his wife taking care of sheep. Well, when you come to chapter 3, what do we see in chapter 3? Well, in chapter 3, right, he's leaving his sheep to find pastures and water as shepherds would do in that field of the world. And he stumbled across a strange and unusual sight, which you see in chapter 3. It's a bush that's burning, but it's a bush that's burning, but it's actually not burning. So not surprising if you and me, any one of us, we would go to the bush and try and check out this strange sight. When he gets closer, suddenly out of nowhere, he hears the voice and discovers it's God who speaks to him. God says to him, what's the very first thing that God says to him? I didn't realize how ancient God is. He says, take your shoes off, right? This is holy ground. I love this passage, right? It actually justifies why I say to my kids, take your shoes off. So God says, take your shoes off because this is holy ground. Anyway, God tells Moses what we already heard about in chapter 1. He talks about all the sufferings that the people have gone, what he sees in Egypt. And so what does he see in chapter, what does God say? He has seen the misery of my people. And when he also, I've heard of their suffering. And not only that, he is concerned about what they're going through. But God doesn't just see and hear and concern. He actually is going to do something about it, right? So he says, I'm going to come down to rescue him. Well, what we've heard about in chapter 1, now God actually shares his thought to Moses. He's going to do something about him. And so God says to Moses, okay, Moses, I want you to go down to the king of Egypt and I want you to tell the king to let my people go. Well, not surprisingly, Moses is taken back by that sort of question, right? I mean, the question, he says, who am I? Because when you think about it, I am nothing, right? You think about it, what is Moses? Moses is nothing more than a small cog in a massive machine. He's one person who's going against an entire empire. He is only 80 years old when we pick up in chapter 3, and he wants to go and speak to a nation that is well over thousands of years old, and he wants to change their tradition. He's a shepherd who wants to go and speak to the mightiest person in the world, the king of Egypt. And so not surprisingly, Moses, when God tells Moses to go and tell to the king to let my people go, Moses is taken aback by this request. It's just crazy. But even more so, it's not simply crazy because Moses is a nobody as far as the king is concerned. What God was actually asking Moses to do was absolutely, totally, completely insane. Why is that? Because what was Moses, what would God say to Moses? To tell the king, let my people go. Now, do you understand anything about what work life in Egypt was? Basically, the slaves were the workers in Egypt. That is to say, the Israelites, who once came in on a fairly proud note, very strong note, because the king at that time loved the Israelites. This new king had no idea about who these Israelites were, didn't care about them, and made them slaves. But the slaves were essentially the workforce of the whole of the Egyptian empire. And when God says to Moses to tell the king to let my people go, he's actually saying to the king, let your entire workforce go. Can you imagine the economic crisis that would hit Egypt? A pandemic has brought the whole of the world to a standstill. Now what God is telling Moses is do likewise. Tell the king to let your workforce go. That's just absolutely insane. Now when you pause for a moment, it's not the first time we've had revolutionaries tell the government to change course. One can think of Nelson Mandela. Now, many of the young ones might know him. The older ones do. But who was he? He was an activist in South Africa fighting against apartheid. But because of his work, he was in prison for 30 years. He was speaking against a long, decade-long tradition that went for a century. Apartheid, separation between black and white. Or you can think of Martin Luther King Jr., who was an activist in the civil rights movement in the United States, in the southern part of the United States. He fought against segregation between blacks and whites in the 1950s, and he was assassinated for what he tried to do later in life. Or one can think of the Tiananmen Square back in the 1990s, many years ago. Student-led protests against government communist policies. Some were killed, many were arrested. But what about this young girl? Now, Mala Yousafzai, I can't remember, no, I can't pronounce her name, but she's a Pakistani activist for female education. And you know when she actually started to protest against Afghanistan policy about how they kept young girls away from education? I think she was about 14 years old at the time. She became a Nobel Prize winner when she was 17, the youngest. But because of her effort to try and tell the government at 14 years old, to tell the government this age-old tradition of not letting young girls be educated, many people actually tried to kill her. And in fact, there was someone who actually, a group came and shot her in the face. But by God's grace, she survived. So when God tells Moses, you go to Egypt, you go tell the king, and you go tell the king to let all those slaves, that is my people, go free, can you imagine? That's absolutely a crazy, crazy thing that God was telling Moses to do. So as Moses rightly says, well, who am I? I am nothing. I'm absolutely nothing. And not only this, when God tells Moses to go and not only tell the king, but tell my people that I've come to save them and to release them, you know what the first natural question they're going to ask? Well, the first most obvious question is, well, God, who is he? What is his name? That is the question which Moses throws to God. Well, I'm going to tell them that you sent me, but they're going to ask, who are you? What is his name? Now, it's not an unreasonable question. Not an unreasonable question. If someone was to, you know, these days we say to people Would you believe in God? Would you follow God? And the obvious question, well, why? Who is he? I don't know him. What does he do for me? Etc., etc. Well, it's the same question which Moses puts to God. You want me to go and tell the people that you're going to be let them free? You want me to tell Pharaoh that you're going to let my people go? What am I going to say? Who are you? What am I going to say to them? Well, listen to God's response in chapter 3, verses 14 to 15. God says to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. So what does God say to Moses? What does God say to Moses to tell the people of Israel and to tell Pharaoh? Tell them that I am has sent you. See that in verse 14? I am has sent you. This is the name that God says that every generation will remember me by. I am has sent you. Well, you've got to pause and think. You've got to ask yourself, well, what sort of name is that? That's a crazy name. It's not like Bob or Job or Joe or Ying or Jeremy, right? It'd be an interesting name. God says, you know, Moses says to God, who are you? And God says, my name's Jeremy. That's just weird, right? Okay. God says, my name is I am. But let's pause and think for a moment about names, right? Names. Because we've got to ask ourselves, what's in a name? Why are names important? And I actually want to say names are important for two reasons. Names are important because they differentiate people from different people. And names are important because they describe who we are. You think about how names differentiate us, right? When our girls were born, it was actually hard choosing names. One of our problems was that when we chose one name, our response, well, hold it, they have a cousin with that name. Or they have a relative with that name. Or we have close friends with that name. We can't choose that name. So it was endless. It was difficult trying to find a name that we didn't know a close relative who had that name because we wanted our girls to be differentiated, not like everyone else. And, you know, I remember many years ago when I was at primary school, right? I was wanting to change my name from Ying. So I was thinking Bob or Jeremy or Derry. I thought they're pretty ordinary names. So Ying is it. I'm sticking with Ying. And when you let me look on Google, how many Yings are there? Well, there are a few, but sadly, most of them are women. But that's another story altogether, right? But Ying is it. It separates me from everyone else in the church. I mean, you think about how many Jeremys are there? Tons of them in our church, right? How many Dennises are there? Tons of them. How many Sammys? Only one, I think. Is that right, Sammy? Only one, right? Okay. Names differentiate. And when God says, I am, he's actually separating himself from all the other gods. But also names describe. They say something about who you are, which is why these names are so important, which is why we choose names very carefully, right? And I mean, sometimes, sadly, people got certain names which really you don't want to, you just got to ask what happened, what was the mother thinking? Think of these names, right? Dr. Jolly Roller Coaster. Who would call their child that? Or what about this one? Jed Knight. Or what about this one? Batman Bin Superman. Crazy, right? But I think you got to have this one. This is the real killer, right? Meet Dr. Hurt. He's a dentist. Where are you going to go to? I'm going to see Dr. Hurt. You know, there are names that describe, say something about you, and you really got to think to yourself, why was I ever given that name? But there are names which we spend a lot of time giving to people because they describe what we think about that person. It tells us they're important to us, right? Okay, let's come back then. So names both differentiate and describe. Okay, differentiate and describe. But what about this name of God? What is it? What about when God says, I am? What about sort of name? God says, I am who I am. What sort of name is that? Well, maybe the best way to understand what this name means is probably to, let me try and illustrate this way. When you ask someone, I am a worker, when the person says, you know, who are you, says, I'm a worker, and you know, work is everything to me. Everything to me. It's the most important thing in my life. But just think about this. What happens one day if I lose my work job? I'm unemployed. You don't know what to say, you don't know who you are anymore. You're lost. You have nothing. Or let's just say one day you say, who are you? I am a father. I am a father. My children are everything to me. But one day you discover that all your children die in a tragic accident. But then what do you say? Who are you? I'm no longer a father. In fact, I don't know who I am because my children were everything to me. Or you say that I am married and your wife is everything to you. She is the world to you. But one day you discover that she dies in a tragic car accident. And what do you say? I don't know who I am anymore. My wife was everything to me. She was the world to me. You see, when someone asks you, who are you? How would you answer? You say that I am, and you follow, there's a string of things that follow. I am this, I am that, I am that. I am a worker, I'm a father, I'm a married, I'm a husband, I'm a brother, I'm a, you know, whatever. Now, think about it. When you say that, that tells you, what does that say about you? It tells two very important things about you. It says that you are someone who depends on things to identify you. And you are a person who changes because of things. So think about it. Who am I? I am a father. My identity is determined by the fact that I have children. Who am I? I am a worker. My identity is determined by the fact that I have work or a certain type of work. Who are you? I'm a married man. My identity depends on the fact that I am married, without which I'm nothing. But it also means that I can change. Because one moment I'm a father, but the next moment I'm no longer. My identity is very much dependent on the things around me, but they can change because of the things around me. I can promise my family that I'm going to buy them the best house in the world, and I've got this best job, but suddenly I lose my job, I can't get a job, and my promise goes out the window. I change. My identity is very dependent on the things around me. My identity can often change because of the things around me. And you know what that means? We are not 100% reliable. We're not 100% reliable because we are so dependent on all our circumstances. If they change, I change. I can promise so much to my family, but it depends on everything else. Well, let's come back to God. What does it say about God when he says, I am who I am? I am who I am. That name is a very telling name because you know what it means? It means whether I am self-sufficient because I am not dependent on other things. I don't need other things to define me. I don't depend on other things to define me. I don't need people. I don't need things. There's nothing outside of me that I need to make me happy. And there's nothing outside of me that can ever make me sad. There's nothing outside of me that I need to fulfill my plans. I am completely self-sufficient. But it means I'm unchanging. Because change, if I depend on things outside and they change, then I will change. But because I don't depend on other things, I do not change. And so, like I said, one moment you can be employed, bringing in $1 million a year and able to promising your family this best mansion. But next moment, the coronavirus hits you, you lose your job and the promises goes out the window. God is not like that. He does not depend on things like that. and therefore he does not change. What he promises is always set in concrete, and nothing can change that because he does not depend on anything. It means that he's eternal. How is he eternal? Because my life is dependent on food, on drink, on exercise. But he's not dependent on things like that. There is nothing that can take his life away from him. He is eternal. But it means that he's all powerful. Because again, there's nothing that can stop him. Nothing he depends on for him to achieve his purposes. He's all present because there's no limit to him again. I can't be there, I can't be with you, I can't be anywhere because I'm bound by my body. I'm bound by transportation. I'm bound by money that gives me the facility to get there and by time. But God is not dependent on those sorts of things. So he can be present everywhere. And he's all knowing. You know, knowledge comes to us through different mediums. I can know you because I can see you. I can know you because I have a telephone. I can know you because I read books about you. I can know you through different mediums. But if I don't have those sorts of things, I cannot know you. God doesn't depend on anything. And therefore, his knowledge is complete and perfect. And you know what that means? It means that I am 100% reliable, completely reliable. Unlike us, where we are not 100% reliable, we are so dependent on other things, he is not dependent on anything except himself. Now, let's pause for a moment and think about this. This leads us to a big problem we recognize. And what's the problem? Well, the problem is this. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? You know who you think you are? Who do you think we are? I'll tell you who we think we are. We think I am who I am. Do you know what we're saying? You see, the problem for us is we think we are the great I am. Not God whose name is I am. We have the name I am. Because we think that we are so sufficient. We think that we are complete in ourselves, that we don't need anything, we don't need anyone. We are the masters of our own destiny, of our own life. Winston Churchill once said this, I'm convinced that today we are the masters of our own destiny, that we are able to overcome the difficulties we face. And as long as we believe what? In ourselves, we can do what? Everything. What's he actually saying there? He's saying that I am who I am. Oh, what about Bill Paxton, the movie star? Through readiness and discipline, we are the masters of our fate. In other words, it's not about our circumstance. I don't need this. I don't need that. It's just self-reliant. If I can do that, if I just believe myself, trust myself, listen to myself, I can do whatever. But here's my favorite. No, Napoleon. Again, Napoleon Hill, great financial advisor. You are the master of your destiny. You can influence, direct, and control not just your own environment. You can make your life what you want it to be. Hey, doesn't that sound like God? I am who I am. But this is my favorite. Equalizer. I don't know if you ever watched Equalizer. You girls, the young ones, you should not have watched it, right? This is whatever, MA, I think. But Equalizer is basically an ex-military guy who goes and says down and outs. And Denzel Washington is the equalizer. He just makes it equal playing field. And there's one scene where he's in a coffee shop and he's just sitting there having coffee. This young girl goes to sit with him. She's at a prostitute. They're just chatting, that's all. They get to know each other. And this is part of the dialogue. Robert McCall, he's the equalizer. Denzel Washington. Oh, wow, Alina. The singer. That's the young prostitute. Terry, the girl, her name. You and I know what I really am. She's living despair, the sort of life. And this is what Rob McCall says. I think you can be anything you want to be. Maybe in your world, Robert, doesn't happen that way in mine. And Robert McCall's words, change your world. Change your world. You know, that's what we think. We think we are. We ourselves think we are the great I am. But then something like a coronavirus hits us and it pops our illusion. It destroys our plans and our goals. In fact, it doesn't really take much, really, to just pop us back into reality. But here's the other thing, right? Here's the other thing. What happens when the two great I ams meet together and clash? When man clashes with God, who do you think will win? Well, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? And yet this is what we see. People have lost their brains and think they can fight against God. They think they can fight against. So let me pause for a while. And let me ask you this question. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Who do you believe that, do you believe that you are so sufficient that the future depends on you and you alone? Do you truly believe that in a clash with God that you'll actually win? Do you listen to yourself more than anyone else? Do you trust yourself? Do you believe in yourself? Do you believe that you are the master? Do you believe that you are the great I am? So when God says to Moses, go and tell Pharaoh, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. Who is this God who has sent Moses to talk to Pharaoh and to the people? Tell them, I am has sent me. The God who made a promise thousands of years, hundreds of years ago, to rescue the people and bring them to the promised land, who bring them into out of slavery into God's new kingdom. Who is this guy? And God says, I am. This is the God who has sent me, is what Moses said. The God who's self-sufficient, the God who knows all, sees all, the God who's all-powerful, who is eternal. He is the God that has sent Moses to rescue his people. But you know the most astonishing thing? The most astonishing thing is this. Moses went to look at a bush that was burning, and he saw God. But you know the funny thing is? We don't need to go into Mount Sinai and go to a bush and look for God here. You know the most astonishing thing is that God has come into our world. God himself, the great I am, has come into the world to rescue his own people. And so we read this in John chapter 8. You are not yet 50. As they're speaking about Jesus, they said to him, and you have seen Abraham? Verily, truly, I tell you, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am. And what's Jesus saying here? That what Moses, the person that Moses encountered in the bush, was none other than the Lord Jesus himself. Jesus is the great I am. He is the one to who is eternal, who is all-knowing, all-powerful, who never changes. He is God in the flesh. So let me wrap up with a question, this one. Who are you going to listen to? Who are you going to worship? Who are you going to follow? Who are you going to trust? Are you going to listen to yourself, thinking that you are the greater I am, the master of your own destiny? Because if you are, it won't be long before you're soundly disappointed. It won't be long before you discover that you are nothing, because everything is just, you are so dependent on the things around you. It won't be long before something else, like another coronavirus or accident, will come and just take your life away from you. And you discover that I am actually nothing. Or are you going to listen to Jesus? Jesus who is eternal. Jesus who's all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good, all-kind, whose purposes who do not change. Who will you listen to? Will you listen to yourself and follow yourself? Or in the end, are you going to listen to Jesus and follow Jesus? Well, let me pray, and let me just pray now. Father, we look at ourselves and we think we are the great I am, the masters of our own fate, our own future. But we are living an illusion, Lord. And it only takes something like coronavirus to shake us out of that illusion. But Father, you've shown to us and you've spoken to us that you are indeed the great I am.